Hi, everybody. It is Diane, and it is Tuesday, July 11th. I'm here with a 12 o'clock group, and let's get started with celebrations and check-ins. Who wants to go first?
This is Lori.
This is Lisa.
I can go first.
Lori, then Lisa.
Okay. The celebration, we had a great 4th of July, and we went to Washington, D.C., and it was very pleasant, just my daughter and myself. And I guess I'm going to take aim, and now that we're back to summer camp and summertime, take aim and maybe being less reactive and pausing before I maybe lose my temper of things, and particularly getting help around the house now that it's summer. So I'm going to just try to, and I think it's interesting, this perspective discussion today, because I think that'll help me with pausing and trying to see what's going on in her mind.
Great. Awesome. So you did it. You gave me a twofer there. So you already gave me what you're taking aim on, which is responding versus reacting, particularly around when you're asking her to help you with things. And I'm glad you guys had a great trip. Lisa, what about you?
Yes. I have my success to share is I have an 18-year-old son who graduated from high school in June, and he had his best year as a senior, and he was mainstream. During the week of his graduation, he ended up passing his road test and getting a full-time 40-hour-per-week job on a construction site, earning $18 per hour, and as a result, he needs to get up at 4:45 in the morning, and he works the entire day, and he has been working for 3 weeks now, and he has been doing so phenomenally well. It's just like, I'm just so incredibly proud of him, and so happy in terms of all the progress he's made, because he was not ever able to wake up on his own, and although I'm making sure he's up, he's finally agreed to, you know, he's waking up with the help of a very loud alarm clock, but he is waking up on his own even early to make sure he's not late. So lots to be grateful for.
Wow. Well, and I think that's the piece of it. It's, you know, I love that you're focused on the celebration of that and not the frustration of, you know, why it wasn't working before it is. I can tell you that my senior's kind of doing the same sort of thing, and it's a matter of when they're when motivation kicks in, not if motivation kicks in. And it sounds like for him, for at least for the time being, there's enough motivation in there that his brain is able to get up and get going for work. So that's fabulous, Lisa.
Yeah. Thank you.
Cool. Jennifer, and then Vilma, I see you joined us, so I'll call on you after that.
I'm celebrating it. I guess it appears my son is doing very well this summer at his counselor in training job. He was asked to join the older group for this session. There's three sessions, each one's 3 weeks, and he's done the past two. And for this third one, he was asked if he wanted to join the older kids, which gives him a little bit more responsibility and free time, so to speak. But he said no because he didn't want to let his team down that was expecting him to be there and working. So I thought that was a mature decision for him. See, that was celebration. Check-in. I think, Diane, the last time we had a call, you weren't on it. It was Elaine, and I admitted that I messed up and mentioned school to my son, or he overheard me talking with a neighbor, and then I also had scheduled him for a mock ACT test. And I guess just for that, I haven't said anything else to him about school, and I canceled the mock ACT without even telling him I scheduled it. So I'm back on not talking about school for another week or two.
Wow. Well, I know that was what you had intended last time you and I talked, and so it sounds like you've been, you know, we all have those moments we flip, and it sounds like you overheard it, and he overheard it, and you just let it move on. But you're working hard at keeping your intention. What do you notice is different as you've shifted your focus?
I guess I'm not, I mean, in my mind, I'm still running through, okay, what can we do to get organized so we start school on a good, you know, step and organize, which is his real hard thing for him to do. So I'm just like, I still have these things rattling in my mind, and I'm just trying to, okay, well, we'll deal with it later. We'll deal with it when time comes.
So what's coming up for me, check me on this, Jennifer, is like if you wanted to figure out what to take aim on this week, it's kind of like, you know, what can you do to start school in a good place and keep your intention of not being the mom that only talks about school? Does that feel like the right place for you to take aim this week, or did you have another place you were thinking about?
Well, another place, because of the topic, perspective is a real touchy subject around my son, because he spent most of his freshman year a lot of times in trouble. But he's like, well, no, this is what happens. And administration kept telling him, well, that's your perspective. That was wrong. That's your perspective. It's wrong. And he got so frustrated because it's like, well, yeah, so tell me what I'm seeing differently. So it's like, we know we don't even go there. So I'd love to be able to know how perspective can be positive, or how changing your perspective, or saying that something that's your perspective of something can be positive, to let him feel more comfortable if somebody says, well, that's your perspective and that's not what happened.
So
without him
going
off.
Yeah, it sounds like where you want to take aim is on how to help him handle the feedback he got from the school around perspective. Is that right?
Right. Absolutely.
Okay. All right. Cool. I'll capture that then. All right, Vilma, how are you? Nice to see you on our afternoon.
Yeah. Glad to be here. So I just asked my daughter what I should be celebrating, and she said that we made a nice dinner. Spaghetti dinner, and sat out on the patio, which she didn't want to do, but she did it because I asked for it, and had a good talk, and also that she's been talking, I'm looking at her and she's listening, also that she's been talking about some of her schoolwork this summer, which is something she quote-unquote never does or did. So
there's some open conversation about what's going on at school, and you guys are enjoying each other's company. That's awesome.
That's great.
That's a lot to celebrate. I know you've been working hard on this for a while, Vilma. Can you feel that?
Yeah.
I mean, are you noticing the difference in the engagement?
Oh, yeah. Noticing the difference in engagement, yep. And she's
cool.
Waving and saying, what were you saying? Non-reactive chore doing chores without reacting. I know, it's a bonus.
You guys are working hard. Tell her congratulations.
Congratulations to you too.
Thank you.
Cool.
Awesome.
Okay.
So I need to loop back to Lisa and Vilma need you to as well to say where you want to take aim, because I've already got that from Lori and from Jennifer. So you want to, Vilma, you want to just jump in and tell me where you want to take aim, or I can come back to you after I talk to Lisa for a second.
Yeah, I want to be able to, I want to take aim at working out with her how to help her motivation, how to incentivize things that she doesn't really get easily motivated to do, like going to the gym to exercise, which she mentally, cognitively, she wants to do it, but it's just hard to get motivated to do it. And I'm trying to figure out, is this, you know, how to do that without piling on too much? And,
so Vilma, can I even work? Yeah, can I interrupt you to ask you how interested your daughter is in this item that you're taking aim on, specifically the gym?
Yeah, she says she is. She says she wants to do it, and then just difficult to do it. Get herself to do it.
Yeah. So my challenge to you, so you want to be, you need, oh, she is nodding, because you want to be as specific as possible. And I think that there's two pieces to this. Part of it is kind of helping her to learn how to motivate herself when she's not very motivated. And the gym is the current example, but there may be another example that kind of pops up as we're talking today or as the two of you guys are talking after the call, that sort of thing. But how does that feel for you to say, how to help her to feel more motivated, specifically around going to the gym?
Right.
Okay.
That's good.
That's good.
Yeah.
Lisa.
It's just an illustration, right. Okay.
I think that would probably be the best thing for me to also take aim on today, helping to motivate my son when he is not motivated to do certain things that aren't fun, like write thank you cards for his graduation gift or complete a chore. That's been, you know, happening lately. I've been giving him days to complete things, and he just is not, he's not following through. And, but again, so if I can get additional guidance on how to help him do it, because it's important that, in my opinion, that especially he recognizes the people who were kind enough to send him a gift for his graduation, that he followed through.
So can I ask a question, Lisa? Because you, the language you used is, how can I motivate him? And we know he's an older teen. He's a young adult now. He's graduated. I don't know if he turned 18 yet or not. But
He has.
He's 18, right? And so I'm going to challenge you to come up with language that is kind of more parallel to what I think Vilma was encompassing, which is how to help him to figure out how to accomplish things when the motivation is not there. Or I can't tell whether it's about getting buy-in or about motivation, because there's two parts to this. One is you want him to do something and he's not bought in, and then the other is once he's bought in and agreed, which is what Vilma was describing, which is she wants to go to the gym, but she can't get her brain to motivate to make it happen. So are you more at the buy-in stage or the motivation stage?
You know, I think he knows it's the correct thing to do. So I think I have buy-in. And in fact, he did half of it last night. So which leads me to believe I have buy-in. It's just the more motivation.
So can I challenge you to have that conversation explicitly with him?
Sure.
And I don't know what it sounds like, but it's like, you know, it's like, I know that thank you notes are important, and I'm guessing they are, that you agree, but I just want to check, you know, how for you, I know it's a pain to get them done, but how committed are you to getting this done and figuring out how to get it done? Something like
Perfect.
That. Does
Thank
that
you.
Resonate?
Perfect.
You know, so you can check your buy-in first, because he may be like, oh, thank you notes are old fashioned, nobody does them anymore, it's crazy, or yeah, I know I need to do them, but I just can't figure out how to make it happen because I'm busy doing a bunch of other things right now.
Right. Okay, perfect.
Cool. All right. So any other, I'm going to loop back to the other two of you. Is there any redirection or re-conversation before we jump into our topic today?
Well, from Vilma, my concern with this, you know, training training to figure out how to motivate yourself is that bringing it up seems to induce her to feel bad about herself for not having done this already. And I'd like to avoid that. I mean, that's not necessary. You know, it's just
so
gets in the way of moving
motivation
on.
Without guilt.
Yeah.
I think that's an important thing to pay attention to, Vilma, because part of what sometimes demotivates us is that, right? So it's kind of like, I know that if I decide that cleaning my house while my kids are gone for the week is important, and then I don't do it, then I'm going to feel bad because I didn't do it. But if I don't say cleaning my house is important while my kids are out of town this week, and I happen to clean my house, then I can celebrate it, right?
Yeah.
So there's that dynamic for her as well, and I think that that's an important piece to keep in mind for yourself and maybe to highlight for her. How does that resonate?
Yeah. Without making her crazy, like, you know, screaming, yelling, I don't want to deal with it.
Right, because you don't want to trigger her. And so just know what's going on. And that is perfectly, the guilt piece of it is a really normal reaction. And, you know, and part of this is going to be what you design with her in terms of what, so here again, some of us have adult kids now. And so the dynamic becomes, what do you want me to do? Not, here's what I'm going to do. Assuming that I have buy-in that you want to figure out how to get motivated to go to the gym, here's what they talked about in PSS today. What do you want to do and how can I help you? As opposed to here's where we're going to take aim even. Does that resonate, Vilma? Does this shift? Okay.
Yeah.
And Lisa, it sounds like that's true for you and I know it's true for me. We all have those post-high school age kiddos.
Yeah.
Awesome. Okay. So we are talking about perspective. And this is a tool that we use in terms of shifting expectations. But this is a tool that we use so much in coaching. And I would tell you that this is probably, you know, when Elaine and I first created the Parent Success System, we sat down and we brainstormed all the tools we use in our coaching and said which are the ones that we most want to teach to our parents. And this one was absolutely at the top of the list. Because what happens to us when we get stuck, whether it's getting stuck in terms of making something happen or getting stuck and getting really actually triggered, is because we are attached to a particular perspective. And I think that you were talking about this, Jennifer, with your son. It's like how he gets stuck in a particular point of view, and our kids tend to get stuck in perspectives. And what can happen is that if we are willing to consider an alternative perspective, then it frees us up for a new action, right? So thoughts, which is our perspective, lead to feelings and lead to action. So if we think something is a certain way, we're going to behave a certain way. And if we want to change our behavior, if we want to change our kids' behavior, or if we want to change the situation because it's not working for whoever, we've got to get into a new perspective. And so we use perspective shifting when we teach trigger management. So the four steps in trigger management, the third one is choose a new perspective. We use perspective changing in the ACE tip that we teach, where we're acknowledging and showing compassion and then exploring. So the perspective of compassion is a shift in perspective. We might go back to our other perspective, but we're going to shift and have a perspective of compassion. But it's that kind of, how do I look at things differently and in a way to move things forward? And the example that we gave here in the workbook is, you know, if I look at my kid and my kid is being rude to me and they're talking snarky and they're talking back, and they always do, and if I go, I have a disrespectful kid, this can't be happening, I'm likely to be triggered. If I can change my perspective and say, wow, my kid's having a really hard time showing respect right now, how can I help him? Instead of responding with being triggered, I'm going to respond with a new action. So this is such a key piece of really shifting and making change, that it's the foundation. And it's also because, you know, we talk about the fact that it's in here and shifting expectations. That moment where we go, not my kids should be able to do this, versus, wow, my kid's having a hard time doing this, is the moment when we can actually figure out and begin to problem solve. So what comes up for the four of you as I share a little bit about perspective?
Well, it sounds a lot easier than I think it is to do, because just thinking of things, you know, this morning we were running late for camp because she was up in her bed on her phone. Well, and then I'm to blame because I'm making her late. So it's like you say to shift perspective, but it also then means that as the parent, we have to stop our emotions and stop the reaction of like, oh, my God, come on, you know. So I think it's a challenge.
It absolutely is a challenge, and it's a challenge for a couple of reasons. A lot of it has to do with habit. It has to do with our own triggers. And as you were saying that, I was thinking about the fact that, you know, I with you had that sort of, why are they blaming me? Why can't they see that it's their own fault? And I realized recently that my new perspective is that it's completely normal for either an ADD-er or a recovering alcoholic, which is the other type of person I have in my life right now, to blame me even when they know that part of it is their responsibility. Because it's a normal reaction. That's a very, very, very normal thing for both of those personality types to do. And if I go, why are they blaming me? They shouldn't be blaming me. It's not my fault. Then I'm going to get triggered. But if I go, you know what? It makes perfect sense that they would blame me. They feel completely out of control in their life. They don't know how to fix what's going on. And they don't know what to do. So they might as well, they feel like at least I'm doing something. I'm getting rid of some of the energy and the frustration by blaming somebody else. And so I may not like it, but it's normal, and it enables me to not get triggered. So can you see that kind of shift between just a subtle shift, right? So it's not about agreeing with it, but it's about creating enough space that you can get to an action other than being triggered. How does that resonate for you, Lori?
Yeah, I can see that. You know, if it's because I can also justify, okay, fine, I'm making her late, you know, I'll take that blame. But I can see if it's a regular thing and it becomes a bigger, you know, it's harder after a while. So I think it would, for us, I already can see when she comes home today and we're in a calm space to talk about what we can do to avoid that, you know, avoid the
right.
Rush
and so there's
whatever.
And there's a difference here because you're saying two things. You're saying, yes, I made her late. No, you didn't make her late, Lori. I can tell you didn't make her late. But it is normal that she's not able to right now take responsibility for being late. Do you see the difference? So you don't have to own what she says to understand and appreciate the fact that her reaction is completely normal for her. You're not saying, yes, you're right, I made you late. Now you might, because it might allow her to move on and say, I'm totally lying right now to myself, but okay, it's my fault. And that may be something you choose to pacify the situation, and you're not having to agree with it being true.
Right.
So the other thing I want to talk a little bit about, because you said this was what makes this hard, is something called neuroplasticity. Have you guys heard that term before?
Yeah.
So neuroplasticity is when the brain gets attached to a certain thought pattern or habit. And I think it's really important in this framework because so many of us, particularly, you know, those of us who have older kids, we've created a lot of brain habits with our kids so far. It's like we've created these perspectives are pretty well ingrained. And so that trigger that says my kid said something unkind to me that hits, I've got a disrespectful kid, I must be a bad mom, or that moment where we look at our watch and the brain goes, oh, my gosh, we're going to be late again, right? So the, those brain patterns have been created over, you know, 18-plus years, and that's called neuroplasticity because every time a brain pattern fires in your brain, your brain is more likely to go that path the next time. Does that make sense? So if you're trying to create a new pattern, you've got to exercise that new pattern a lot of times before the new thought becomes dominant over that old habit thought. So just throwing that in here, but I'm kind of curious what comes up for you guys around that.
Well,
you know, you're absolutely right. It does take time to train oneself to think, okay, compassion is the right motivation right now for a response, if any. But what I've been thinking recently, in addition to that, is that isn't that really a parental responsibility towards your children that we should be really taking on that perspective throughout? Because this is, we're parents. That's what we're supposed to do, isn't it? Aren't we?
Well, so here's my reaction to that. So the minute you say, aren't we supposed to, it feels a little catabolic to me. It's like, oh, man, it's one more thing for me to do. I would say, if that feels good for you to say, I have to do this, this is my responsibility, and it motivates you to have that perspective, then awesome. They'll not embrace that perspective. For me, and I don't know anybody else, that perspective feels like, oh, my gosh, it's one more thing on my list. I don't have to do this, but I want to do this, or I choose to do this because I know that it helps my relationship with my kids. And it feels a little lighter for me if I look at it that way.
Oh, okay. All right. For me, it's another, like a moral, there's a moral dimension to this.
Or just so, you know, we have a choice. It's like anytime you feel like you have to do something, that's a perspective shift again. Anytime that you have to do something, you feel like you don't have a choice. If you feel like you have a choice, most of us are more successful and more motivated.
Okay. Good.
Cool. Other thoughts?
This is Jennifer. You know, I'm just thinking, you know, listening to you and what you're saying and neuroplasticity and stuff and how my son has such a negative connotation to whenever someone tells him, well, it's your perspective, you're wrong. Am I wrong to think that they should then try and help him see why his perspective is wrong?
So I'm going to get, can I get theoretical with you here for a second? Yeah, so Lisa, can I get a theoretical for you a little bit? Wait, no, this is Jennifer. Jennifer, can I get a little theoretical for a bit?
Sure.
I personally don't believe that perspectives are ever wrong.
Okay.
And
me neither,
I think
because
that
it's your opinion, basically.
Right. It's the way everybody sees the world through their own worldview. And the reality is that, you know, everybody really does see it differently. And they may not have seen it the same way. Now, your son's school is using language that is inconsistent with that worldview, which is, his perspective is wrong, and there's an opportunity potentially to have a conversation with the school to say, here's language that might work better with my son, and it may be that instead of saying your perspective is wrong, to say I hear that you saw it that way, or I hear that you see it that way, and I honor the fact that you have a different perspective than I do, and unfortunately in this situation, because the school is the authority, the school's perspective is really the one that needs to be in charge.
Right. And so, he's looking at it like they saw the video of what happened. So, okay, maybe you saw something I didn't see or I didn't feel in the moment. That's why I'm thinking this way. And he's like, well, why can't you just show me the video and let's get on the same page, or let me know how I can, because I'm thinking, you know, the questions, how else can I look at this, or what else can be true? If my son asks that, yeah, something else could be true. I could be wrong. I could have gotten it wrong. But it's still his perspective.
Yeah. Well, and I think that maybe that's the comment. So how does that tie in here? So it's kind of like, how do you teach him that even if it is his perspective and that's okay, that it also may not be the most accurate perspective that's being considered?
I like that. Yours might not be the most accurate. I like that.
And I think that part of it is the language. The minute somebody says wrong, you're wrong, most of us tend to get triggered, especially if we feel like if somebody were to say, no, the sky isn't blue, it's purple, you know, you would go, what are you talking about? The sky is blue. You know, it's that sort of, yes, I know that what the word blue means to me is probably different than what the word blue means to you, just because I know enough about brain chemistry. But, you know, it's that sort of, you know, it's that sort of thing that we get triggered. And so I think that for me, there might be two sides of this. One is, is there someone in particular at school that might be open to a conversation about alternative language that might help him?
Mm-hmm.
And number two is kind of, what is the conversation? This is more in your control. What is the conversation you want to have with your son that helps him to see? Sometimes people do get stuck in their perspectives and they see right and wrong, and you can't deal with, you got to deal with that. So
it's just a matter of him has that perspective because he knows he thinks he's right. I don't think that's it at all, but it's how his mind sees things that, yeah, they're different than when you're looking at it from an outside, when you're not involved in the actual situation.
So is that about how do you translate that for him, or is that about just acknowledging that for you?
I think a little bit of both. That, you know, I know that, yeah, he's not innocent in all these, you know, all these situations, but school's not helping by just saying, oh, well, your perspective's wrong. Because they're not helping him to see that someone else's perspective might be right. That, you know, they only say, oh, you're wrong. So he needs to, I think, also learn, you know, how else can I look at this? If in my mind I close my eyes and I turn my body to where this other person was standing and replay, can I see something different?
Well, and perspective is not just about where we stand, although that can be really powerful. And one of the tools we use with coaches is kind of like a 360 sort of thing. If you were a spider up in the corner of the room looking down on this situation, what would you notice that's different than what you're seeing from where you're standing? So that could be a really great perspective shift.
I always say I want a fleck of dust or something on his shirt and be with him all day to see how he sees stuff.
Right. And so the other piece of perspective, and this might be helpful for him as well, is that everything that's happened to us up until now in our lives creates a perspective for us. And so if every time a teacher sees a student who talks back as being a power struggle, the assumption that teacher's going to make is if you talk back is that there's another power struggle coming.
Mm-hmm.
So they're going to always have that perspective comes from their life experience. And so sometimes just highlight, same thing with our kids. Every time something has happened a certain way for our kids, they're going to have the perspective that it's going to happen that way again. So it's important to be able to figure out, you know, is this other person stuck in a perspective, which is part of what's going on for him. It could be a really great conversation to say, maybe the school is caught in their perspective. And we can't change it. Unfortunately, I wish we could, or maybe we could, and maybe, you know, is there an opportunity and what that opportunity would look like. But everybody always has a different perspective, even if it's just a little
right.
bit different.
I mean, I agree with that, you know, and growing up, the third child after my brother, who was always in trouble, when I started high school, teachers just assumed I was going to be just like him. So I had to work twice as hard to prove them, hey, I'm me. I'm not him. So, yeah, I see how, you know, they had their own perception based on the past. But you can change how someone thinks going forward.
Right. So I'm curious what's coming up for the other three of you as I'm talking here to Jennifer.
This is Lisa. Well, I think what was really helpful to me as I'm listening is the statement that I think maybe Diane, you wondered whether or not, or maybe it was the woman who said it, are we both stuck in our own perspective? And that was, I think, that applies to what I was thinking about in terms of neuroplasticity and perspective taking, that although I am not a yeller, I have a pretty even temper, I will sometimes speak very firmly without raising my voice, but maybe through gritted teeth if I'm really unhappy. And just the other day around the graduation card thing, I made a comment last night because I've been sort of asking him to work on this for the last, I don't know, five days or so. He said to me, change your tone. And when he said that, I immediately became, like, annoyed. I didn't respond, though. I didn't say a word. And it truly has to do with me, you know, as a parent, feeling like I'm being very reasonable, and I've waited for days. However, but I didn't say anything because I think in that moment I was starting to try to change my perspective about how difficult, you know, this is for him. Because, again, I have to check in with him in terms of the buy-in piece. He might really think it's just a waste of time, and he's only agreeing to do this because I'm asking him to do this. So, but then his perspective also is whenever, because his father used to yell at him a lot, and it was very unpleasant for him, and I think whenever he thinks I'm disappointed or angry, even based on my tone, which is firm, he goes back to a negative place. So, again, I think we're both stuck a little bit, but continuing to make progress, and it just takes a lot of time and practice to respond differently and to be conscious, to be a conscious parent.
Well, I think that's the piece of it. It does take time and practice, and it takes consciousness, right? So you've got to be aware of where you do get stuck in your perspective. And
right.
You know, I think it's a great exercise. A lot of times, like when you're doing couples coaching, I'll have people switch perspectives, and I'll say, okay, Vilma, tell me, you know, tell me your daughter's perspective on this situation. And then I'll go to her daughter, and I'll say, you know, daughter, what tell me your mom's perspective on this situation. And so just kind of pushing yourself to really see how the other person sees it can be so, such a good and powerful tool in really kind of partnering together and coming up with a collaborative problem solving.
Yeah,
I think, this is Lori, I think it's interesting because, you know, I was talking about changing how we can understand the kids' perspectives, but you kind of hit on a point that it's really important that your child understands your perspective. You know, my daughter is not a strong communicator, so sometimes it's difficult to figure out what to have her say what she's thinking. So I have to make assumptions, which many sometimes are wrong because we come from different, you know, beginnings. So she can sometimes see why why are you so upset? And I never, you know, we're rushing out somewhere and I never sit down with her, so she understands kind of my perspective. And I think that's like a good aha.
Well, and it's valuable on a couple of reasons. I think there are some of us that, and I mark myself in this category, that part of what enables me to move forward collaboratively is if I feel heard. And so I've taught my kids to stop, and I do it by modeling. It's like I'll say, this is what I'm hearing is your perspective. Can you tell me what you think my perspective is? And so we actually have that dialogue. And so not only is it important for them to be able to see it our way, but it can be important for us to feel heard in the conversation. And sometimes all I need is my kid to understand my perspective, even if they don't agree with it. And that happens a lot with in partnerships and couples as well. Any other thoughts on this topic of perspective shifting before we wrap up?
I think what triggered my thinking in what you just said was that I think that the sense of being heard is really important to my daughter. And I think that has a lot to do with just the whole history of having ADHD and being misunderstood and, you know, what she needs, her needs being special, being misunderstood. So I think it's super, super, super important for me to always acknowledge, yeah, I heard you. And sometimes, you know, often I forget. I don't say anything. I'm kind of quiet that way. And she says, well, did you hear me? Which means, yeah, I need to learn how to acknowledge more that, yeah, I heard you. I heard you. I heard what you just said. I got it. So,
well, and that's great that you've got that awareness.
Yeah.
Awesome. Anything else? Okay. So I'm going to move go ahead.
I'm going to, in addition, you know, once I'm remembering a recent conversation which was like that, where I said, okay, you tell me where you think I haven't heard you about XYZ, whatever it was. And she did, and then she said, and I guess you must have felt differently about it. And I said, yeah, and I thought I felt like this about it. So it made her voluntarily ask me how I saw it or felt about it. And that was really powerful.
Love that.
Yeah.
What happened differently because that was able to happen?
It was after one of the coaching calls that you or Elaine had said, get curious about this. And my way of getting curious about it was to say, not what did you think, but how did this make you feel? And that was,
Love that.
Right. That kind of opened it up differently.
Yeah.
Open up the conversation on a different level.
Yeah, and I think that that can be really powerful, is kind of even just looking at thoughts versus feelings shifts the perspective.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, so we are on wrap up, page 61. Let's take a few minutes, answer the four closing questions, and then we'll do our checkouts. So what did I focus on or pay most attention to today? What's my clarity, my takeaway, an aha that I had? What's a realistic action step for me to take? And how do I set myself up for success with this action? Jot down some notes, and I would love to hear from each of you at least one takeaway and one action commitment.
This is Jennifer. I think my takeaway was that a perspective can't be wrong. And trying to set myself up for success is thinking about how I can talk on this subject to my son and maybe how we can come up with some ways we can talk to school about using some different language.
Right.
So.
How open do you think he's going to be to that conversation, Jennifer?
I think he will be because he's just so tired. About, him, shredding, just hating that comment, oh, you're wrong, perspective is wrong. So I think just how he'll be able to do it, he'll be willing to see, okay, how can we do this, or how can I look at something different?
Cool. Well, and that's a great intention to have, and it may be that there are some times that he can do that and other times that he can't. I think it takes a great deal of maturity, and sometimes our kids have it, sometimes not so much.
Mm-hmm.
Cool. Awesome. Who else?
This is Lori. I think the kind of the takeaway is that we need both of us to understand our own perspective. So there's this clear understanding, and we both feel that we're being heard. And the interesting thing, we talk about the neuroplastic, about how things are ingrained. So if we're trying to keep this communications about the perspectives, we have to keep reintroducing this concept about before, to sit down and pause and to think, okay, how are each of us thinking? Because if we don't do it, often enough, it's not going to overtake this already ingrained, 14 years of doing things a different way.
Yeah, absolutely. Cool. So what do you do what are you taking in terms of specific action, Lori?
Well, I'm going to just try it both, try to, now we can talk about things that have happened recently about what our different perspectives are, but then hopefully as it goes, we'll actually be able to pause in the middle of what could be an emotional interaction and kind of say, okay, what is her perspective? And she could say, what is my perspective? And that would hopefully lead us to calmer times.
Awesome. Who else?
It's Velma. I echo a lot of what Lori says, but my specifics are a little different. So what I'm going to focus on is, along with the whole notion of switching you know, always remembering to have a compassionate perspective when inquiring. Also to remember that we both are retraining our brain to take time with that, retraining the brain. And that for me involves specific actions are like that I need to more acknowledge her feelings more out loud and her what she said out loud. Right, that's it. That's the specific thing I'm going to focus on this week.
How achievable does that feel for you, Velma?
Oh, it'll work. I mean, it's work, but it'll do it. It'll work.
Okay.
I'll
cool.
work at it.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Lisa?
Yes. I really enjoyed the reminder of the importance of checking in with my son in terms of, I often tell him what I feel I'm hearing him say, his perspective, but I don't necessarily ask him consistently enough, what are you hearing me say? So I think that was really helpful to remind myself to do more consistently. And my action step is I'm definitely going to, you know, talk with him about whether to determine whether or not there is buy-in. How does he feel about me asking that he formally acknowledge? Because he didn't see these people at his party. Those that he saw, he acknowledged. He said thank you. So those that he did not see at the party and they were kind enough to give him a gift, you know, I feel it's important that he acknowledge. So I'm going to have a conversation with him about it and see whether or not there is buy-in. And if there is buy-in, then how do I help him to motivate to complete it? Because he's done half. He wrote the card. He just did not address the envelope. He wanted me to do that part. And I'm willing to do it if, because I don't, it's not worth, tension and conflict. Although I think he's old enough to do it himself. You know? But.
Yeah. Well, I love that. You know, I think it prevents triggers, and true confessions. addressing of the graduation thank you notes threw me over the deep end about 2 weeks ago, and I ended up just doing it in a huff. So, but then I was like, what? You know, you have those moments where it's just like, oh well, you know, I got triggered, and it's okay. So,
mm-hmm.
Cool, awesome, great call, everybody, and look forward to talking to everybody in 2 weeks? 1, 2. Week of the 25th. We're on again.
Okay.
Talk to everybody soon.
Okay. Great.
Thanks.
Thank
Bye.
You.
Bye.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Bye.